Okay, the Swiss train that is CGI is running a little bit behind. Two presidential candidates talking about the grand challenges of the 21st century. We'll do that to you. So first of all, what I want to do is we're going to start off with a commitment announcement at the top of the program, and we're going to have a couple more at the end. So it's my great pleasure to welcome to the stage at this point Judith Alton, who's the CEO of the International Council of Nurses, and Bryce Carmini, who's the Executive Vice President of Eli Lilly and Company. And they are the International Council of Nurses and Eli Lilly are committing to roll out a new four-year training program that will enhance the delivery of life-saving treatments for tuberculosis. This commitment will help achieve the World Health Organization's global plan of treating 1.6 million people living with multidrug-resistant TB by 2015. It will develop new e-learning tools and programs for nurses worldwide and provide technical expertise and institutional support. So please join me in thanking them for this terrific collaboration.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our moderator, Executive Director, Global Health Workforce Alliance, World Health Organization, Mubasher Sheikh. And our panelists, Minister of Health, Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia, Minister Tedros. Chairman, Intel Corporation, Craig Barrett. Director, Rural Health and Education Service Trust, Uruna Uprete.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the session on the expanding global health workforce. It's a pleasure to have all of you here, specifically on a time when we are dealing with the situation where we are facing a global crisis in terms of shortage of health workers. Many of you, I'm sure, are already aware of the fact that, World Health report of 2006 clearly mentioned a shortage of about over 4 million workers, mostly in the developing world, and we also know that there was a number mentioned in terms of the countries, 57 countries in crisis. But we also know that the crisis is truly global in nature in terms of its distribution, and it's not only limited to the South, but to the entire world, including the country where we are presently meeting today. And that's why we need to have come out with new ideas, new strategies, new approaches to address this particular issue. I think we're going through an interesting period, an exciting period, considering the fact that there have been renewed commitments, acknowledgement, and appreciation of the crisis and its underpinning effect on the issue of global commitments. There have been positive signals, very loud voices, political commitments coming out of important forums like the G8. We have heard good political statements, even this morning, actually, from the two sort of candidates for the presidential sort of elections for the next few weeks, where they're committing themselves clearly in terms of eradication and elimination of certain diseases and to the Millennium Development Goals. But we know that if we are serious and we want to achieve these goals, one of the fundamental prerequisites is to overcome this shortage. We need to have workers. We need to have people to deliver these services. And we need these people now. We can't wait for the next 2015 for achieving, for having these people in place, the workers of all categories, not only doctors and nurses, but the workers which are well-trained, well-equipped, supported, and motivated, and are available there at the periphery to deliver these services. And we are very glad that some very sort of good, positive statements, commitments have been made over the last few weeks, few months, and during the last 2 days as well. We're also looking forward very optimistically towards the UN high-level meeting, which is going on the other side of the city, And we know that this issue is high on the agenda there. And we hope that, again, some of the commitments will not only be renewed, but these commitments will eventually be translated into some concrete action and renewed resource allocation. So we are really hopeful. And it was also very reassuring that since yesterday, this workforce issue has come up again and again in different sessions. I'm sure you were there. They were coming in different with different contexts, different dimensions, but everyone did realize that this is an issue which is multisectoral, which needs everyone's contribution, and where all of us is at stake. But we also understand that it is not something where only the government or the private sector has to play a role. All of us have to come together. And I think this session is extremely critical in the sense that it will give us an opportunity to learn what's happening in terms of some new innovative actions and approaches which are being deployed and applied at various levels and by different constituencies in terms of addressing this this crisis. We have a very distinguished panel here who represents a good mix in terms of stakeholders, and we do hope that their interaction with you will help us to have a better understanding, but not only a better understanding of the underlying factors, but also how we can address these issues in the coming months and years. I think one of the major issues which we may like to focus on is looking at the new technologies and the role of the private sector, because the private sector has, as a major stakeholder, has come out with some new technologies, have contributed, and is playing a bigger role as we move along in terms of progress on health systems as well as health workers. So hopefully see how the three different dimensions at the government level, as well as the private sector and the civil society, looks at this development in terms of new innovative approaches and how we can connect these approaches in terms of a unified objective. Before I invite the distinguished panelists to sort of respond to some of the issues, and I think we are running short of time, but just a quick reminder that all of you are encouraged to write your questions if you have any queries, and please hand it on to your facilitators. Every table has a facilitator with a computer. So please share these questions with the facilitators, because that will help us to respond to these questions in the later part of the session. So, Mr. Tedros, let me start with you. You have been actually recognized as one of the leaders in terms of your understanding and some of the innovative steps which you have taken at the policy level and at the programmatic level to address the issues related to health systems, but especially in terms of health workers. As I just mentioned, Africa is a continent which has the highest burden of diseases, but which also has the least number of health workers. Most of the countries in crisis are in Africa, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, and Ethiopia is actually one of those countries which is going through this crisis. Would you like to share with us some of the steps or some of the processes which you went through or some of the approaches which you have applied while addressing this issue, especially in terms of bringing a formal and informal sector together to apply some new methods, some new approaches, to address this particular issue? We would really like to hear from your experience on this particular.
Thank you very much. As you have rightly said, Mr. Chairman, Africa in general, and Ethiopia also part of the sub-Saharan Africa in particular, is facing the human resource crisis. And after we have really seen the extent of the problem, what we have done is we try to see what are our goals to achieve, you know, commitments to the focus areas that we have. And it's not a coincidence anyway, but the focus areas we have in Ethiopia in terms of priorities is exactly the same as the MDG goals, actually. So we have these focus areas, five focus areas, HIV, TB, malaria, maternal health, and child health. And based on these goals, what we have done is we try to identify the type of health workers we need. Because when we talk about health workers, it's not just the same category. We cannot really talk in lump sum about, you know, shortage of health workers. And if we categorize them, then we can at least address, part of the problem. We can train those types of health professionals who are in short supply, but that we can produce them easily. So from the focus areas we have identified, which I said related to MDGs, then we have tried to design the best strategy to address the problems, and the best strategy being health promotion and disease prevention, and the primary curative service being one of the components, but with a major focus on health promotion and disease prevention. And for that type of strategy, the type of health professionals you need mainly is actually low-level and mid-level, because it's the same in the rest of Africa, but in Ethiopia, more than 80% of the health problems, as I said, are due to communicable diseases, and that's why we have the focus areas I told you already. So for the prevention and promotion, since we need low and mid-level health professionals, we have set ambitious targets and started training in tens of thousands those type of categories that we can easily train and retain. Now for the primary health care, we have already trained more than 24,000 of the total. We need 30,000 for blanket coverage. So in each village, 12,000 villages of the 15,000 villages we have in Ethiopia have health workers at village level, two health workers per village who work with the communities in health promotion and disease prevention. So by the end of this year, actually 2008, we will train and we will graduate and deploy the remaining around 6,000. So that's like we will have universal access to the village-based health services by the end of this year. And the other categories are like nurses, and in partnership with the private sector and also trained by the public sector, we have achieved already the 1 for 5,000 population, you know, nurse proportion. And we have also started accelerated training of the mid-level, like health professional, health officers, what you call in the U.S. physician assistants, that will be deployed at primary health care level and also at secondary and tertiary level services. And we will finalize the training of these health officers by the end of 2009. And we will not complain about, shortage of low and mid-level, at least by the end of 2009. So the whole idea here is to provide what we can provide, what is at hand. We should not complain about, you know, the whole health professional. Some people say we cannot do that, we cannot produce more, we cannot hire that many countries. And the issue they raise is in relation to IMF, but I don't think IMF would stop you from doing that. If that's what you trust will address your problem, they can only advise you. So we are progressing with training tens of thousands and deploying them, because that's what works for us. And the other category of health professionals, which is more difficult, is training doctors. That's the serious shortage we have, actually, the severe one. And to add that, the main problem in that is the supply and demand issue. It's not the brain drain which is affecting it, actually. It's not training enough, which is the root cause, the main problem of, the serious shortage. And we see it like that. And we designed a strategy of flooding and also retention. And we have designed models to overproduce, actually, doctors. And this year alone, we have increased our capacity fourfold from 250 intake nationally to 1,000. And in 2 years, we're preparing our institutions, building 13 universities, brand new universities, and additional 11 in 5 years from now. The 13 universities are almost done, to increase the capacity of our intake and enroll around 8,000 and address the problem. Because we believe that the problem is a supply and demand issue, short supply, not brain drain, although there is a problem linked with that. So what we're basically doing in Ethiopia is, instead of blaming others for the crisis, to really try to identify the root cause of the problem and at least do what should be done from our side. And in some years, even the doctors' shortage could be addressed, because neighbors like Egypt graduate 10,000 a year and they don't complain about shortages of doctors. And it clearly shows that the problem is the supply and demand, trying to address it. And preparing all these mid- and low-level health professionals, it's also helping us in task shifting. Until we really build and have enough high-level professionals, we're task shifting many of the services to mid and low level, because they can be done by mid and low level health professionals, and we're trying to address the problem that way as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Just highlighting the complexity and of the problem and the nature and some of the important steps which you have taken. Craig, actually, you've heard the minister here. The process he's going through, some of the challenges he's facing, and some of the steps he has taken to address them. Intel has been in the forefront of introducing new technology. We would like to hear from you how, in your experience, this digital revolution has in a way affected or facilitated overcoming this issue in from that perspective, in a way that we are facing a situation where we are short of resources, and at the same time, the crisis is something which needs urgent resolution and urgent action. So what are the challenges, if any, you have faced, and some of the examples of the experience you can share with us in terms of application of this new technologies?
Well, perhaps it's appropriate that we have a computer at every table so that we can increase the productivity and efficiency of this discussion, increase our collaboration. That's more or less what the medical challenge around the world is facing. I'd like to draw the comparison that the healthcare industry is a little bit like the computer industry about 30 years ago. Today, the hospital is to the healthcare industry what the mainframe computer was to the computer industry 30 years ago. If you wanted to compute 30 years ago, you went to the glass-walled area, handed in your card deck, and that's where all computing took place. And that's kind of what happens today. If you're really ill or potentially ill, you go to the hospital to get the same sort of service. I think the challenge we face, not only in the emerging economies, poor areas, rural areas, but also in countries like the United States, is to bring the same sort of diversification of healthcare capability, remote diagnostics, remote monitoring, very similar to having your own compute capability, your own PC. And we've seen this many, many places around the world. We've done demonstrations in the middle of the Amazon in Brazil, remote villages in South Africa, Egypt, India, China, Lebanon, Nigeria, where if you just take basic communication and compute technology today, but a high speed broadband wireless link in the remote diagnostic equipment, you can hook up a remote clinic to the expertise that's at an urban hospital, and you can get quality opinions real time of the citizens in the remote villages. Mm-hmm. And I think the beauty of this is it's not exotic technology. It's happening today. You can see the results. And also the other beauty of it is there's this whole industry popping up, which is over 160 companies have come together who manufacture diagnostic equipment, and they're all adopting common interface protocols and conventions to make this equipment plug and play in a standard computer. So if you had one of the computers like on your desk today, you'd be able to walk up and put any type of diagnostic equipment, plug it in the USB port, self-identify, self-register, self-configure, and all of a sudden you have an intelligent being that can collect information at the local level. If you're hooked up to a communication link, you can then video conference or download that data to a urban hospital, to an expert, and get the remote diagnostics. Mm-hmm. So this is not science fiction. It's not magic. We've seen it happen time and time again. Well, it does not necessarily increase the number of medical practitioners, but it way increases the reach of the medical expertise and gets them out of the urban environment real-time into the rural environment where the need is the greatest.
Absolutely, Craig, because it's not only we are talking not only in numbers, but we are also looking in terms of efficiencies and effectiveness in terms of availability of services. And let's hear from Aruna, actually, who has been working in the field, you know, for the last 20, 30 years. And Aruna, I'm sure you have gone through a process where, as you just heard, computers was something which was rarely out there, but not necessarily ever considered to be utilized by the field workers, by the sort of people at the periphery, health workers. But have you seen this transformation, and how did you see this this technology affecting, or positively or negatively, the delivery of services or the general aptitude of the health workers in terms of their you know, motivation and in terms of facilitation of delivery of services?
Coming from a very small country from Nepal, and hearing these two distinguished speakers, I can tell you from my experiences that from one part in our rural areas where there is not very much resources and also medical services, but from another side in capital cities and big cities, we have all the facilities up to heart programs, up to CT scan. And in between those, there had been some improvements of telecommunications from district levels, meat worker or even doctors who had been able to discuss with the doctors from capital city and to have diagnosed and also to treat the patients. So I think in the challenges we are facing in our country is that the mid-level health workers who had not been trained very well while they were studying, and now they have to use all the new ideas, new technology. So that is one of the problems which we are facing. And what we are trying to give them, what is available local resources, and at the same time giving them information what is available out there. For example, I can give you a very simple example of maternal child health issues, which has been, it had been a lot of discussion here. 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, a lot of women used to die because of tetanus problems in rural health areas. And now that has been drastically come to down thanks to our vaccination and immunization programs. And because those middle-level health workers who were able to give vaccination, but at the same time, many people in rural areas had been able to know about this through distance communication like radio, like FM, like television, and they knew the value of how much it is important to give the vaccination to women so that a woman and a child wouldn't die. The same thing is happening nowadays in our country about while we are discussing about human papilloma virus, and yesterday we were discussing about adolescent girls and their health and education. This cervical cancer is one of the main reasons of death in our countries, and now we have vaccinations, but not a lot of our even doctors, not talking about mid-level health workers, do know about this. So that will be our another challenge, to give them information about human these vaccinations. Though it won't be available in the local places, but there is a chance that people would, when once they would know about this, they'll go and take this. So these are the things, I think, where we have to balance our local resources and the new technologies. As they say in Chinese language, a 1,000 miles long journey starts from a single step. So there is lot of things to do, but at least things have started.
Craig, actually, let me sort of pick from that. You know, she said, how can you help her in her journey, Aruna? She says, you know, yes, it has a value and it can be very useful. But from your perspective, how can the private sector build partnerships with the civil society and with the public sector at large to facilitate their efforts in terms of introduction, but in terms of making it user-friendly and institutionalization within the system?
Well, I used to cringe when people asked me how to make computers user-friendly, but I think two-year-olds now are getting pretty good at that technology. I would make the following comments, that anytime I've seen one of these experiments be successful, it's never given as aid, it's never given away, it's always given in conjunction with an operating entity that's either run by the city, the government, the local entity, but or run for profit. We made a commitment earlier today, when President Clinton announced it, of the Arvind Eye Clinics in India. Those are for-profit clinics. They happen to give away some 60% of their services for free, but in fact, they are for-profit entities. So it's the private sector which is really providing a service, encompasses the total composition of the community at hand. Some are willing, capable of paying, others are not. Services are being provided, but it's a for-profit entity. When we created one of these clinics in the middle of the Amazon, Island City and Parentines, it was done by the city council, who had a medical clinic. We helped set it up with the basic technology, but once it was up and running, It was the property and responsibility of the local entity. And I was terribly encouraged after we set it up the first year. We went back the second year. The clinic had increased its physical floor space by 50% and had also started to use the communication resources we provided to train a whole cadre of kind of para-health givers, 18-year-olds who were getting basic training on the video conferencing back from the big hospitals and then spreading out in the community as kind of health aides to educate people and then bring them to the clinic if they saw the need. So I think the technology is relatively simple to use, but I think the important key is it has to be a standalone, for-profit, or community-owned operation. It's not something that you give in as aid and then hope it's going to maintain itself. There has to be total local ownership.
Minister, you are a minister of a country with a per capita health expenditure of around a dollar. You think that this digital technologies, the IT and other supportive systems which are and either already being used or under development, do you think they are applicable, they are feasible, they are scalable and practical from your perspective?
I agree. I mean, our government actually believes that, information technology, ICT in general, is the leapfrog for development. And we're embarking into a huge intervention, actually, of, developing the infrastructure. By 2011, we will install 16,000 kilometers of fiber optics. This is a huge fortune for Ethiopia, actually. It's a lot of money. So far, we have already installed 8,000. The entry port is through Sudan and Djibouti. As you know, we're landlocked. The 8,000 is done, and the 8,000 will be done by 2011. We have district nets now, all the government units, the lost government unit is already connected through WaradaNet. All our high schools are now connected through SchoolNet and AgriNet to connect the agricultural research centers is well underway. The one which is a bit lagging behind is the HealthNet. In partnership with India, we have just on pilot basis, we have started telemedicine. In two hospitals, as what has been said before, you can through telemedicine access best experts elsewhere, and we are now connected to Hyderabad, and in the future we can be connected to the rest of the world also when we install, telemedicine in many of our hospitals, and that can help us in addressing part of our workforce problem, especially in highly skilled ones. So we consider it as an opportunity. So although our per capita is small, but we're really investing a lot of money, the government actually, and the infrastructure will benefit not only the health sector, but the overall development in the country.
I think we have the opportunity to hear, and some very nice ideas sort of have come forward, and I'm sure this discussion will continue in the subsequent sort of part of this session. So maybe I think we give an opportunity now for the participants to continue the discussion, and then we'll come back. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I apologize
Thank
for
you.
This. Okay, you've heard from our distinguished panelists, and now it's your time. We want to, in light of what you've heard about the challenges and opportunities with the health worker shortage, what are some concrete actions that could be taken by business, by government, by civil society to invest health workers? You've heard about the importance of community and mid-level health workers. You've heard about some of the opportunities for the innovative use of low-cost information and communications technologies. You've heard about task shifting. So in light of the discussion, we want to take advantage of the collective IQ of the room to identify some specific ideas. I also want to announce that for those of you who are involved in the announcement that President Clinton will be making on safe drinking water and sanitation, we'd like you to be at the front of the ballroom at 11:45. So thank you very much.